recorded live.
Well, hello. Let's see. Got a couple of people online here.
Yeah, morning, Rick. It's Matt.
Hey, Matt. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Had a better week. I mean, I've had better weeks, I guess I should say.
And Melody, is that you? Okay. Who else is online with us?
I'm just saying the three of us.
I guess that must be me then. Well, I'm here.
No, I'm here too, Rick. It's Samuel. I just got you muted because I'm walking to my car in a bunch of wind.
Got it. Let's see, guys. Hang on just a second.
I'm sure you have a lot more. You've been gone for 2 weeks. There's a lot of us out here.
Either that or everybody forgot we exist.
Yeah. Looking at the chat boards this weekend, or the blogs, or whatever they call them, the forums, I'd say that nobody's forgotten you exist. Been pretty busy.
We've got plenty of questions, that's for sure. Well, let's see. I'm just going to go ahead and jump into the questions then, and let's see if I can do it this way. Okay. That way I can see some of the chat, if anybody chats anything, but I can't see who all is online. All right. How do you deal with a spouse who blames you for everything? How do you deal with a spouse who blames you for telling our kids about his affair? He's involved for the past 3 months with a woman who is 23 and he's 44. I told the kids a month ago. He was present when I did. I think he would have preferred that I kept lying to them every time he did not make it home. How do I react to the constant defensive attitude he takes with me, blaming me for the affair and his childhood and anything or anyone else he can blame? He feels he needs to be happy too. He feels that if he were happy in the marriage, he would not look outside the marriage. He is still in our home, but it looks like we'll separate next month. But again, on his terms, he feels I'm pushing him too fast, that we need to think of the impact a separation will have on our finances. We are currently under the same roof, but he sleeps in our basement, and I sleep upstairs. I don't know that there's a great answer to that. I mean, you can't make him, take responsibility for something, and that's sort of the problem. The fact of the matter is, if he had been happy in the marriage, there may be a chance he wouldn't have had an affair if this is his first affair. However, not being happy in a marriage, an affair is not the only alternative. In fact, it's not even the healthiest alternative. Like, what I always say is that, the two of you were in the same miserable marriage, and one of you chose not to have an affair. The problem isn't the condition of the marriage. The problem is how a person chooses to respond to the state of the marriage that begins to reveal their own personal problems. And the fact that he can't take responsibility for it just kind of talks about his own understanding, his own belief system that what he's doing is wrong. But it takes a lot of integrity and character to take responsibility for what he's doing. And at this point, the last thing he wants is anything that will make him unhappy, because what he's seeking is, as far as I'm concerned, 100% totally self-centered. Anytime I seek my happiness, I'm not always acting in the best interest of other people. And to me, love will always act in the best interest of another person. So, I guess you can say to him, this is your issue, not my issue. I've been in the same relationship that you have. I chose not to have an affair. You know, as far as the kids knowing, the kids are going to know. If your goal is happiness, you'll actually never think about other people. And just tell them. So, you know, the bottom line is right now you're being 100% totally self-centered. And I hope that at some point you can begin to consider somebody besides yourself and your own happiness. So I'm terribly sorry you're in that place. I hope that ultimately he'll begin to look to something, Diana, besides himself. And because there's not a lot you're going to be able to do to get him to stop what he is doing. I just hope that he gets it at some point. Next question from the 7th. 12 weeks have passed, and my husband is still living with his adultery partner, using her address as his address on checks, etc., going to another church with her, being seen at restaurants, working out, in effect, acting as if he's married to her. I've since found out that at the time the affair started, November 08, she was also married, has since divorced her husband. I have yet to hear from my husband except for his return of two bills I sent him to pay. I also sent the house and car payments, which he did pay, but I only found out by calling the banks. At 8 weeks, he sent a text message to both kids, 15 and 18, and said, "I love you." Both kids deleted his text. At 11 weeks, they both received another text telling them to have a great first day at school. One is a high school sophomore, the other is a sophomore in college. My 19-year-old, actually her birthday is today, September 7th, finally texted her dad back and told him he had caused the family a lot of pain and needed to get help. She asked him not to contact her again. Each child responded and told me only later what they had done. My husband has never contacted me. I heard he was telling people in the town where he works that he's been separated for 3 years. He is being introduced at this woman's as this woman's boyfriend and has been to meet her family. It is as if he's taken 24 years of his life and erased it from his memory. I continue to read and talk to my ARC mentor and my Harboring Hope members, which were a godsend that I would not have had without Harboring Hope. And I've had met with the counselor who counseled my husband for his addictions, including SA, alcohol, and who also was our marriage counselor some 2 to 3 years ago. The counselor said this adultery is all about my husband's addictions, regardless of him telling me that he could go and be happy and not have to relive all the baggage we had if he stayed. My husband has not told his family. They live 3 hours away. But I have discussed addictions at length with his brother. No more lying to on my part. No more covering up. I have not wanted to file for divorce, and I'm concentrating on my children and getting my head around his addiction. My question, what do you think about a husband who can literally walk away from 24 years of life and ride into another woman's bedroom, etc., to the exclusion of his wife and his children and the church and friends, and then go and pretend to play family with his adulteress? Even going to church, how can someone this delusional ever wake up and own his conduct and bind himself at the foot of the cross again so that he realizes what he's done and so and the immense hurt and harm he's caused to his wife and his children? My daughter asked me how she could possibly respond to have a nice day at school when he's rocked her world. She asked me what color the sky was in her dad's world because it certainly wasn't blue. P.S. Again, thank you. Thank you for Harboring Hope and all you do at ARC. I do not know where God is taking me, but I am taking it one day at a time, knowing that he will use every horrible circumstance for his glory because that is what his word promises me and the children. And do you know of a counselor in Beaumont that I could counsel with? Houston is 2 hours away, but I could drive there on the weekend if I had to. Thank you. Wow. You know, the only thing that I can say that Scripture teaches on this basically is you withdraw from them and you let them follow that course. That's what Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 5. He says that you turn them over to Satan for the destruction of their flesh, for the salvation of their soul. And he's not saying, you know, that, you know, so they'll die. He's just saying, look, when somebody's heart is hard, all you can do is let them go and let them follow that path, because the end of that path isn't what they think. The problem is, how long does it take for them to come to that point? And, you know, that's really kind of an individual thing for each person. But there's not going to be any amount of talking. There's not going to be any amount of persuasion. At this point, the guy's just deceived, again, just like the first person, pursuing their own happiness at the expense of everyone else that's connected to them. And the problem with sin, and I'll use that particular word, even though it's not a good clinical word, but really, if you define it, if God is love and if sin is missing the mark, then ultimately what the Bible tries to describe sin as is any action that is contrary to love. And when you go completely self-centered, ultimately that is the definition of evil, because you do things without thinking of what or how it's impacting other people that are connected with you. You forsake them in the pursuit of your own happiness, regardless of what it does to others that actually you have connections with. So I think protecting yourself by staying as disconnected from him as possible, I think you live your life well. I don't know of a counselor in Beaumont. However, you might call the Christian counselor. Oh, actually, I would suggest you call Focus on the Family. Use them a lot and see if they know of anybody in Beaumont. You might also call the Houston Christian Counselor Association and see if they know of somebody in Beaumont. Because I agree, you need to find somebody close to where you're at. Tell your children that, you know, if they go to Al-Anon or they begin to understand some things about addictions and deception, I mean, just kind of educating themselves is what is ultimately going to be the only thing they can do to get their mind around it. Because like you with Harboring Hope, they also have to figure out, what do they do with this? I mean, who are they and how important are they really if this man would do this? Because the messages he's giving them are horrible. Because ultimately he's not concerned about them and he's not concerned about anybody but his own happiness. And in reality, he's not even really concerned about his affair partner. I mean, the problem is this relationship has little or no chance to make it. Simply because, I mean, ultimately, you know, if his pursuit is happiness, then it's pragmatically smart for him to be with her as long as she makes him happy. But the second she quits making him happy, he'll go and find something else, because right now he's not interested in love and he's not interested in life. He's just interested in being high. And that's a scary place. I wish I could give you an answer that could fix this one. All you can do is understand it and then protect yourself from him and tell the children to understand it. We can try to love him, but don't try to change him. Just leave him alone until he comes to the end. And hopefully he'll hit bottom soon. Okay, the next question. Living pretend normal and the punishment for breaking character. Rick, it has been just over a year since I found out my wife had an affair that lasted over a year. It's been the worst year of my life. I'm completely dysfunctional. I have panic attacks and constantly depressed. My wife convinced me to stop taking my meds. I realize now that it was there, that there would be one less reminder for her of what was happening. We have not been to counseling for 5 months because that would involve talking about the affair, and that is not the way of fixing the problem, according to her. All we have to do is focus on right now and move forward. Yeah, right. We live in the quintessential pretend normal relationship. I've been kicked out of my home twice for mentioning the affair, and now it makes me and how it makes me feel. And when the inevitable outburst comes from just holding on to it, I punch a hole in the wall and throw the picture frame on the floor, and my wife had me arrested, even though there was nobody else in the house at the time of
Sounds like we lost Rick.
Yeah.
He'll come back. He'll come back.
Who's in Western Washington besides me?
Wendy and Benny.
Oh, okay. Are you on the normal side of the sound or the Seattle side?
We're on the... Of what? The sound?
The sound.
We're on the west side of the sound.
Yeah, so am I.
Although he's on the Seattle side at work at the moment.
Yeah. I do the same thing. I live on the peninsula, and I commute to the other side of Lake Washington for work.
Yep. I was going to try to... I got kicked off TalkShoe. I was going to see...
TalkShoe's working. It's the only one missing is Rick.
It says he's there. Oh, it shows that he's not dialed
in. He's coming back in now.
He's coming.
Yeah.
We're just waiting patiently.
Yeah. I see
okay,
him.
So where did Alex go? Where did Alex go?
He's been arrested twice through the picture frame. Your last words as you went away was, nobody was there.
Okay, good. Yeah, well, thank you. Let me know if I disappear again. I don't know what happened. so he blasted the picture frame. The latest incident was yesterday when I was simply overwhelmed with issues in our office. When I realized I was reacting to simple problems, I said, I just am not the same person. I was overcome with emotion and went home. Of course, since I broke character, the character of the happy husband and living a happy life with my my wife punished me and had me sleep alone in our bed. Today, she continues to show her disapproval by refusing to look or talk to me. That's what I get for putting on a show that was her response. Her response last night. I can't continue a living hell during her. Living a life like this. My wife not only cheated on me, but made my life a living hell during her affair. She constantly put me down, criticized me, and had a total lack of affection for me, so that I would leave on my accord. When I didn't leave, she falsely accused me of kicking her in bed and threw me out of the house so that she could be with her lover. I lost my wife, my home, and being close to my daughters, living in a one-bedroom apartment while she had, her, by her own account, a great time with my daughters and her lover. I don't really know why she asked me to come back 5 months later. I don't know if the affair continued after I did. I don't even know fundamental things like why I'm here now and not... not her affair partner. I realize now that I will never have peace on my mind because I can't even bring up the subject. And even if by some miracle, if she agreed to talk about the affair, she's been lying to me for the last 4 years, would the seventh or eighth version of truth really even help me? I know I can't live like this. If this continues, all that will happen is either I will end up killing myself or have another outburst and be jailed again. I found out that all a woman has to do is make this happen is say I'm scared. Obviously, I don't want that to happen. I just don't want to live like this anymore. I guess my question is, considering the circumstances, is a year long enough to make such an important decision like moving out and moving on? I have had both you and my personal counselor advise me not to make any emotionally based hasty decisions. Well, when could I make such a decision and not have a very high chance of regretting it? Wow.
Hey, well, you're contemplating your thought here, Rick. I got to tell you that this guy could have wrote my story.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, if there's no brokenness, and in the person who was unfaithful, and what they want is for life just to go on as if this thing never occurred, doing a hopover like that really is not a way to, there's no way for trust and healing to ever happen that I know of. And I think you give a person a certain period of time, and just kind of my formula for whatever it's worth, you give them a period of time to understand that and become willing to, I guess, try to help with your pain. But like I was saying earlier, it's not even love always acts in the best interest of another person. And I would think it's really not in her best interest to allow her to continue living life this way, which is still 100% totally self-centered. It's all about her. And if she really loved back, just like with one of the men that we mentioned earlier, they would actually be concerned about how their actions are impacting another person, and there would be a willingness to help the other person heal. What it sounds like to me is that this person really doesn't want to lose their lifestyle, but they also don't want to make the sacrifice necessary to have a real relationship. And I don't see, you know, anytime you end a marriage, there may be some sadness, but if this is where she's at right now and you've given her a year and she's still not willing to address it, I don't know. That's one of those places where I would say, you know, the only thing you can do is to, I think, say, okay, this is not, I love you, and there's nothing you're ever going to do to get me to quit loving you at all, which is why I'm filing for divorce, because it's not okay for you to continue acting like this and treating me like this and treating other people like this, and you need to figure out what you want in life, and because it's not loving of me to enable you to kind of live in this state. You're no different now than you were when you were having the affair. This is still about your happiness, and that's not life. I mean, life is hard, and life is about other people. And if you're going to have a meaningful relationship, it's not always about your happiness. If it's just about your happiness, then life is all about you, and that's not the point. Life is about others, and how do we give, and how do we, you know, live. And I mean, that's just not it. So I don't think you're going to have a lot of regret as long as you know why you're doing it, and you've got to understand that if you leave her, it's got to be based on love, and it's got to be based on the fact that love does act in the best interest of the other person, and it's not in her best interest for you to enable her to continue to act like this, and you need to let her go. So, I don't know, are you on the call by any chance? If not, I hope you get to listen to that, and if you have some questions, just post it, and we'll try to hit it again next week. That's a hard one. Audrey, am I still alive by any chance?
Yes, you are.
Oh, good, 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 good. Just wanted to make sure. It didn't say I'd hung up, but I just wanted to make sure. Okay. Continuing to live with secrets. I'm married to a sex addict. Sounds like a movie title. He had more than 30-year history with porn, strippers, online infidelity, physical infidelity, with longtime partners. That does not include his childhood, and young adult years. He's participated in EMS, and we've attended couples counseling and individual counseling. He's a member of a men's support group that is not a 12-step program. He believes that he's past relapsing with partners physically online, yet has not been able to maintain sobriety around pornography. He had committed to disclosing relapses to me, and I believe that he initially made the effort. When we were able to work on these issues together, we became closer. I feel safer because I believe he saw the rewards of living in honesty. I also believe that his men's group would help him remain honest and open. It is not. He slipped back into addict thinking, and even their support isn't enough to help him live in honesty. I think he actually uses his group attendance to prevent me from suspecting that he's acting out. He thinks he's learned how devastating betrayal is to a marriage, but he slips into the mistaken belief that a little pornography doesn't hurt anyone. He knows how to draw the line. I buy Rick's definition that infidelity is the keeping of secrets. Most 12-step programs would tell you you're only as sick as your secrets. His secrets are making us both sick. He finally admitted to using pornography after I tried to figure out what's wrong. He had become short-tempered, verbally abusive, and blaming me for everything that went wrong, ignoring responsibility or performing them carelessly. I repeatedly asked for check-ins and gave him many opportunities to share and ask him up front if he was struggling. Instead, he chose intimacy. Instead of choosing intimacy, he chose not to disclose and remained in denial. Both of us are under a lot of stress right now, so I feel he's vulnerable. I know there's a great deal of shame and with relapse. But I also know that disclosure means you have to give up the behavior. He wonders if it's impossible for him to stop using pornography. He mostly passed a lie detector test a few months ago, but his response to the question of whether or not he thought he would use pornography in the future did not provide positive results. I don't expect perfection, but I need honesty. I hear the same justification over and over. I'm stressed. It's nothing. It's nothing. Everyone does it. I deserve it. It doesn't hurt anyone. It's just a little fantasy. I know when to stop. Addiction has one goal: death. He is addressing the addiction in the best way he can for now. He's reading pretty much straightforward books I've found that offer hope and solution without judging. He will continue to attend his men's group. But in my heart, I'm wondering if these actions are enough to overcome the false beliefs addictions use to keep you trapped. He refuses to go to 12-step programs, saying that he isn't ready for that. Besides, he's not as sick as those others. He doesn't want to find an accountability partner, even though he could ask one of the men in his group. He won't go back into counseling because he says we can't afford it. I want to support him, yet I do know that he has to be in charge of his recovery. I know that only he can recover by wanting to and letting God help him. I'm trying to stay out of his way and not without enabling him. I've asked for a recovery plan in writing. He thinks his verbal plan is enough. I think it isn't real enough for him. I want scheduled check-ins. He hasn't provided any. We're into 6 months of dishonesty and bad choices. He's accusing me of trying to control his recovery. I don't think I am, but I want to remain open to his feelings. I want to let go and let God, but this challenge is really taking a toll on my physical and emotional health. I've never made him feel badly about his addiction. I've never given him any ultimatums or timelines. I've shown no anger towards him for his addiction, but he fears I may. I told him what I need to feel safe and honest. Honesty. I don't expect perfection, just honesty. I believe God has a purpose for us, and I've heard his message to stay. It's becoming harder and harder. It's been more than 2 years since D-Day. Our recovery over the infidelity has been a miraculous blessing, but it suffers even with every lie. Even though God has provided me with the armor of his love, every lie leaves me feeling unprotected. I need help. I guess my question is similar to the other questions I've read. If your spouse finds it difficult or refuses to live in honesty, are there some tools for staying hopeful? I know that God is my support, but I'm having trouble hearing him. You know, I've said this before. I'll repeat myself. In terms of the tool for staying hopeful, and in some ways I already hear that you're doing this, but fear, I think in a lot of ways, and despair, the opposite of hope, really come because of an issue with faith. And I believe that faith is an organ of my soul in the same way my eyes and ears are organs of my body. And if I, my eyes, they weren't intended to create light. They're actually just pretended to perceive light, just like my ears aren't intended to create sound. When they do, that's a real problem. They're actually just intended to perceive sound. With my faith isn't intended to create the work of God. My faith is intended to perceive the work of God. But if I begin to focus my faith on anything other than God or anything other than stable, then ultimately I experience fear and hopelessness. Because there's not a lot of hope in anything other than God. And you never can tell the end of the story by the beginning. You can only kind of let the thing play out and know that it's not going to happen like you believe. In a situation where I think, like you said, you're hearing clearly that you're supposed to hang on and not go anyplace. And I would say that to any of the previous questions that I answered too. You know, I usually start all of my questions with, you know, what's God telling you? Because if God's telling any of you to stay or any of you to leave and it doesn't make sense to you, if God's saying it, that trumps everything. What God says in my mind doesn't need to make sense to me or to anyone else. But at the same time, with this type of situation, all you can do is walk by faith and keep your eyes fixed on God and believe that God knows exactly what's going to need to happen to touch his heart and to bring him back. And all you can do is believe and trust that that'll happen and then stay detached. The problem in this situation is never the behavior. The problem is always a hardness of heart. And again, a lack of an inability to know how to love, because love always acts in the best interest of the other person. And for your mate, you know, they need, out of love for God and love for others, and ultimately they need to be willing to do whatever it's going to take, because they need to be grieved over how their actions are impacting other people. You know, and I don't know a great way necessarily to get someone to that place other than letting them know time and time again, every time they do something that hurts you, keep expressing your pain, keep letting them know that they're wounding you. Tell them that, you know, you really, that you love them, that there's nothing they're going to, you know, when you express that hurt, say, you know, there's nothing you're ever going to do to get me to quit loving you. But the fact is, when you do that stuff, you really hurt me. And someday I hope you can come to the place to where the pain you cause me, or you're causing me, becomes more important to you than your own pride and your own fear of doing recovery. I mean, typically when I've got somebody in this situation, I recommend that they do 90 meetings in 90 days just to really get focused on things and to shake it up. And I'll have them do AA meetings. I'll have them do any type of meeting. I don't care. I just want 90 meetings in 90 days so that they're in a place, especially AA, I love, because it's a place where they can get beyond their shame. And secretiveness is almost always driven by pride and shame. We're back to that place where we believe that we should be able to do it. And we haven't done it. We're embarrassed we haven't done it. We want to prove that we can do it. But the fact is, we can't. All my failures reveal to me is my inability to do this thing, and I've got to somehow be able to accept that I'll never be able to do it. And hopefully he can come to that place where that happens. And hopefully you can keep your eyes fixed on God and not get too discouraged in the process. My prayers are with you. Here's a another one. Understanding. Well, it comes to understanding the depth. When it comes to understanding the depth of pain and loss, Wendy feels, as a result of my thoughts and actions, will recovery ever be possible if she believes? It's from Denny. If she believes, I don't get it, and probably never will. Yeah, you know, one of the things about getting it, there does come a place, Wendy, where you have to decide that he may not totally get it, but at least he's made a good faith effort and he's got it as far as he'll get it. And that has to eventually be good enough. And that's a place that you've got to come to in your own mind. Denny, for you, I think continuing to try to understand, to continue to even ask questions and wrap your mind around it. But you can't make getting it, you getting your head around how it's impacted her, that's not, I mean, that is a piece of what you need to be about. And hopefully you're going to be able to get as far there as you can. You'll probably never fully be able to get there, but hopefully your ability to feel and to love your heart will become softer and you'll move closer. And hopefully Wendy can at least see your heart's desire. And it's the heart's desire to understand that often is enough, that often will allow her to let go. Monday.
Thank you.
Okay, I hope that helps. Hope or lack of? Sorry, Rick, it's been a crappy week. I've had no hope for my marriage, and life pretty much sucks right now. I'm praying for God to relieve Satan's hold on my wife, but that free will stuff just keeps getting in the way. My question is, how do you find hope when there is none?
This is first, it's mine. I want to expand on that a little bit because I really wasn't in the mood to type when I sat down and wrote that. I've come to the realization in the last 4 or 5 months that there's something more than just an affair here. I seriously, I don't know how to say this kindly, but I seriously think there's a mental illness here. Just from everything that she is doing to change, I mean, all the standard affair stuff, from changing history to blaming me for everything. You know, just like I said earlier, the Victor's letter I could have written. But it's, people are starting to come up and ask me what's wrong with my wife, because she just goes up and down in these loopy moods, to extreme depression to extreme euphoria. And I'm thinking maybe manic depressive. And you guys have said, and you said it just a few minutes ago, if God's telling you to stay in the marriage, stay in the marriage. And if God's telling you to get out of the marriage, to get out of the marriage. And everything that God's told me so far is to stay and keep working. And my ethics just don't let me. I believe she's sick, and my ethics don't allow me to abandon the sick or the ill. So, where do I go for hope?
Well, I guess it depends on, you know, what is your hope? What are you hoping for?
I'm hoping right now just for her to see what she's doing and try and get help. I don't see any chance of our marriage ever recovering. At some point here, I am going to have to divorce her. You know, she continues to cheat. She continues to be in the affair. Saturday night, she spent the night with her, or Friday night, she spent the night with her affair partner, didn't come home. But what I'm hoping for now is not to save my marriage, because I don't think that's possible, but I'm hoping that she'll try and see where she what she's hit, and we'll try to get help.
You know, the problem is something has to motivate a person to try to get help, and
right.
and typically the only thing that motivates us is pain, loss, suffering. I mean, for someone that's pretty much self-centered, the only thing, even if they're mentally ill, that kind of drives them to get help in the long run is they've got to be more miserable in their current state, miserable enough that they begin to try to find something to help them feel better. The path they're on has to just quit working, which is kind of where the problem is. You can ask them to get help, but, you know, really what's going to motivate them, motivate her at this point to do anything, and I don't know what that would be. It may be someday. I mean, you can make the resources available for her, and maybe that at least you will know that in good faith you've done what you need to do that's loving toward her by trying to help. But in the long run, you know, you can't make her do it. And it may be the loss that eventually takes her to that place. I wish that there were a better answer to that.
Yeah. Well, I heard today that she believes I'm bugging everything. The neighbor told me that she came over and was whispering because she thought I'd bug the neighbor's house.
Yeah. You know, if she gets bad enough, Matt, the one thing you can do is you can call the mental health deputies. You can have her evaluated. I mean, if she's gotten paranoid, and there really is a mental illness, it is very difficult. One of my frustrations, even as a mental health professional, even though I'm not what we do here in counseling by any means, but when I have somebody in my office who I am actually serving as a therapist, I can have somebody who's full-blown paranoid schizophrenic, but I can't necessarily make them do what it's going to take to get them to get better. I mean, I can show them the path. I can tell them what to do, but in the long run, they still have to make the choice, unless they become a danger to themselves and a danger to others, at which point you do have the ability to see if the law, if you can get legal forces to step in and help her to, you know, kind of force her to get the help. But until she's a risk to self and to others, the legal system isn't going to step in. And you can, you know, I would certainly be very clear that you think she needs to get some help, offer a path for that, but I don't know what you can do beyond that point legally, and hopefully she'll take advantage of it.
Yeah, I don't see much hope in any of that happening, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad watching somebody self-destruct. It really is, and I'm sorry you're there. Relocate. We're 90 days since disclosure, and due to some circumstances, we need to move. We're considering staying in the area we are in now, but we're also considering moving 600 miles away to live closer to my hurt spouse family. I was wondering if you advise against moving across states shortly after disclosure or not. I'm not certain how soon after your disclosure you moved across states. We actually moved about 6 months. Nine months. Even though within 6 months, if you're asking what we did, we kind of knew that we were going to probably move. I don't think that, I know moving is a huge decision, and I think there are a lot of things, Jennifer, that you have to consider. You know, where your mate is at, does their heart seem to be soft? Are they broken? Is this an avoidance thing? I've certainly, for some couples, you know, 90 days into it, I said, you guys need to get out of Dodge because of problems with the affair partner. So I don't know that moving is necessarily a bad thing. Moving can actually be a really good thing. So I don't know if there's a good, solid, this is the answer. Are you there, by any chance, Jennifer? Okay. Just remember, if you move, we've still got the internet. We can still talk. So hopefully that will be clear to you what you need to do. Stalemate. Short, sweet question. My primary love language is words. Denny's is also words, and I honor that by saying things he likes to hear. He honors me with works of service, which is what he likes to do. I point out, that is very nice, but I need words. And then he tells me he doesn't know how to do this. Before I would have believed that. But he wrote a song to his emotional affair partner, so I know he knows how to use words. How do we break the stalemate? Typically, a simple assignment works really good with this type of situation. And when I have couples that are having trouble with words, I actually have them start working on appreciations on a regular basis, telling each other what they appreciate about each other daily. I have them begin communicating by email, having to send love notes through the email all the time, or sending cards. But I try to create a ritual or really good habits that really help with words. One great assignment that Doug Weiss came up with that I really like is each night you share, each of you shares a feeling you had during the day. Then you have to share another time in your life prior to the marriage when you had that exact same feeling. And then each night you have to tell your mate, after you do the feeling exercise, you have to tell the other person something that you really appreciate about them. And if you'll do that for 30 days, you'll find that just the level of communication in terms of intimacy that you're doing, it really helps to begin to open up intimate communication. An example of that, I might tell Stephanie today, I felt really excited because of our grandchild, and it was a lot of fun going to the park. And then if I think of another time in my life where I felt that same sort of elation, I think it was like when I was 8 years old and my grandmother gave me this chemistry set, and I had that exact same feeling. It was so much fun. Not that my granddaughter's a chemistry set, but that's the same feeling. And I really appreciate the fact that how patient you've been lately with, letting me come and spend time with my granddaughter. So that would be an example of that exercise. And if you do that every night, it actually opens up some really good conversation. So that's a good assignment. Hopefully y'all can take advantage of that one. Or just do the email thing where you have to email each other twice a day and tell them something you appreciate about it.
Okay.
Okay, for another part two from Samuel. let's see. Here is the gentleman's story below. My wife had an affair. She's 32. The kid is 18. I'm 40. We're pastors, and no one really knows. This was disclosed in April, but she said it was over and with some guy she met at the mall. Truth be known, it was a youth in our church, and it lasted until the end of July. The kid left town for a year. After I confronted him, he seems to be getting over it easier, but my wife fell so in love. She's now very depressed. It's been 6 weeks since it ended, but she feels hopeless, and what bothers me is that she's not very remorseful. She says she doesn't even feel anything about breaking vows and does not want to commit to the marriage. I'm at a point where I feel like ending this, yet I see her so messed up that I feel I should wait. My whole issue is she is so ungrateful, unlovable, and cold. And on top of that, she says this was the best thing that ever happened to me. She feels she does not love me anymore as a lover and that she is hopeless. Any words for me? Can she or will she recover? She refuses any counseling, now saying she already knows what to do and the counseling won't change her feelings for this guy. There's more to the story, and I'll post that again. Maybe too much to read while on the air, but perhaps you can read and summarize before you answer it. Hang on just a second. Samuel, are you still on the line?
Yeah, I'm back on here.
Okay, talk for a second while I read the second half here, okay?
Okay. So I jumped back on the call. Thank God. It got cut off. So has it been good? Has Rick been running any smack about me?
A lot.
Good. I like to feel consistency in my life. It helps me. It makes things flow smoothly, you know? It's funny when you're talking to Rick and he knows the most intimate details about your life. You can never really go to a battle with him because he just goes, kind of like that time when this happened, huh? And you just go, okay, we're done.
Never mind.
Y'all be praying. There's an EMS this weekend, and my wife are going to be speaking at it. So please pray for it, for all the couples that are coming. I'm sure there's some real hurting people that are going to need what Rick has, most importantly, what Jesus has. So please pray for
what?
That.
Have you done it before?
Yeah, and we've helped Rick do it. This is our second or third time, so we're thrilled about it.
How many people are usually there?
You know, anywhere, the smallest we saw was probably six or eight couples. I think the most was 10 couples. So it's usually a pretty good amount of people. And, I mean, it changed our lives.
Well, it sounds like a good amount without it being too many.
Yeah, and everybody's in kind of unique situations, all very triage unit oriented. So it's really... It's amazing to see Rick and Steph pull it off, especially when Steph does all the cooking for it. So, you know, it really, I would throw out a caveat for y'all to pray for Rick, because usually when this thing happens, his family has to endure and walk through a lot of drama, and there's usually all kinds of stuff that the enemy throws against it. So keep it in prayer and stand with everybody, because it's a real, as you all probably know, a vital weekend.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Samuel, I'm ready, man.
Okay.
Ouch. You know, when somebody like this is in that limerent state and going through withdrawal, the biggest issue is they're not... As many of you who are in a similar situation, they're still 100% totally self-centered. And so there's still a hardness of heart, because what they're doing is they're trying to do the right thing, or it can even be worse. It may be that they have no choice because your affair partner has made a choice for them, but it doesn't change the fact that they've become attached to the wrong thing. Addictions in many ways, and I consider this to be like an addiction, addictions in many ways are where my needs for love and my needs to be loved and my needs to grow close to the source of love, this is what Meyer says, have gotten attached to something other than the God intended. And in this situation, she's looking for her need to be loved. It has now gotten attached to something that's counterfeit and really can't meet her need. So in a sense, you know, I look at someone like this and just accept that they're a little bit insane. If they are able to not be in contact with them, with the other person over a period of time, typically that level of kind of lovesick sort of condition that they're in goes away, and eventually they begin to look around them and gain perspective on life again. But right now, she has no life perspective. And she's, again, not considering at all how her actions are impacting other people. But what's interesting is for someone like that to be able, and And the reality is she actually can care a great deal for you again in the future, but not until she's able to work through the feelings and kind of the irrationality that's associated with this particular person. To do that, that won't happen, I think, personally, unless she's able to really process through it, because she can't be rational about her relationship with him. It's just an impossibility for her. And when I work with someone like this, we may spend 6 months talking about the affair partner almost every session, just to help them gain perspective to see that this really isn't what they want, so that they can get their heart detached. Because if they do the right thing for the wrong reason, in other words, if they just try to do this by force of will, then eventually all that happens is they get really bitter and resentful toward everything that's keeping them away from what they really want. They've got to first figure out within themselves this isn't what they really want nor what they really need. Once that is handled, then the second step for someone like your wife or this woman's wife is that she's got to let go of all of the resentments that she's currently holding against him, because there's probably other things that she's used, resentments that she's used to justify having done this. And until she forgives those resentments, then she won't be able with her heart to move back toward him. And last but not least, he has to work at becoming someone, I guess the person that God really wants him to be. He's got to work on his own personal growth and his own personal development, completely apart from who she is, so that actually he becomes someone that she would be interested in. And I don't say that, you know, he needs to try to change himself and be better for her sake. That's not the point. He just needs to begin to focus on something else and becoming the man that he really is. I believe that women, like in this situation, they really don't want to be the adventure. They just want to be a part of the adventure. And if you begin to live well and are following your path, and you become if he becomes confident in where he's going in life, then he'll actually become much more appealing to her in the long run. So, you know, hopefully, you know, it will take time. If he really wants the marriage, he's got to give her time to get beyond it. He may need to tell her that one of his conditions to continuing in the relationship with her is that she gets help. I mean, he may just have to say, I'm not willing to do this if you're not willing to address the problem. Because the hopover in this situation, just like the very first question we had today, we had some tough ones today, but like the first question we had today, that hopover does not work at all. It is simply, you can't pretend that it didn't happen. And not only can he not pretend it didn't happen, she can't pretend it didn't happen, and they've got to address that. And if she's not willing to do that, then it'd be almost better to sit there and make it happen and lose the marriage just in an attempt to make it happen than to ignore it and to go on limping for the next 30 years. I don't know if that helps him any or not. Hopefully it does. So that's all we have for today. And I appreciate it, guys. And I'll be talking to you all next week, okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Rick.
Okay.
Thanks, Rick.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye, Rick. Thanks. Bye, Rick.